Today's program is brought to you by White Oak Pastures, a five-generation Georgia-based beef and poultry farm determined to conduct business in an honorable manner. For more information, visit whiteoakpastures.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to another week of The Main Course. I'm Alexis McLaughlin here with Philip Gilmore.
Hello, good morning.
We are taking over hosts for Patrick Martins, and we have in studio today Mike Edison. Mike is author of I Have Fun Wherever I Go, Dirty, 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 Bye Bye Miss American Pie.
And 28 pornographic novels.
Yes, I did the math. Nine a year. You did nine a year for 3 years. Is that correct?
No, it was actually the first year was probably more like 25. Then I slowed down.
I don't know. It looks like it was averaging to one every 7 weeks.
I regressed to the means. No, I was writing a book a week when I started. Are you kidding?
Wow.
Otherwise, it wasn't worth it. I didn't get paid enough.
That's prolific writing.
Well, yeah, you learned how to write in that gig. That's right.
You were inspired.
Cindy's Brutal Ordeal, that was mine.
Really?
Rich Man's Sex Toy, that was mine.
Wow.
Angela, Class Virgin, yeah, that was mine too.
Next time we have you on, I'm going to bring all my copies for you to sign.
It was a different time back then. It was before VHS technology was affordable.
You also did a few other projects with
with the guy who used to do this show. What's his name?
Yeah,
Patrick Martins.
Yeah,
that guy.
Patrick, that guy.
Who gave me my start in radio.
Wow.
Well, you know what happened was when this studio started, I think Patrick was one of the only shows, and he had this like marathon Sunday show. It was like 3 hours.
Yeah.
And he was just desperate to fill time. And I was skulking around the bar at Roberta's when I Have Fun Everywhere I Go came out. Some of the guys, he really liked it. I was hanging out a little bit. He's like, come on the show and talk about your book. And it went well. I was like, can you come next week and be a guest again? And it sort of kept going on. And he just kept feeding me because, come on, I'll buy you lunch at Roberta's. And finally, it was like, can you be my co-host? Because Katie's not here this week. And it's like, I got to go away. Can you just host the show? And finally, it was like, what the fuck? Just start your own show, dude.
Awesome.
Yeah, humble beginnings is where
it was like Lou Gehrig. You know, someone was on the DL. He stepped in and...
Exactly.
1,200 games later, there he was.
Wow.
So we're here. It's been a tough week for journalists. I guess we're all kind of journalists in this room. Charlie Hebdo and
now
another arson in Germany.
Yeah, they just attacked a place in Germany for republishing the cartoons.
I saw that. Who's responsible? It seemed like didn't seem like an Al Qaeda cell. Just from the quick news brief that I read, it seemed like a couple of assholes.
Yeah,
you know, not organized as such.
I didn't see anyone that had taken credit for.
I actually love the name of the German newspaper. It's the Hamburger Morgan Post.
I noticed that too.
Wow, how can you? Who wants to set a newspaper on fire called the Hamburger Morgan Post?
Well, you know, if you live in Hamburg, you are actually a hamburger.
Yeah, right? That's true.
Other weeks. Phil, how was your week?
It's good. I'm in the middle of getting ready to open my second restaurant called Hi Hello. I'm opening up with a sandwich shop out on the Jefferson stop. Do you like sandwiches, Mike?
You had me at Hi Hello.
Yeah, Hi Hello.
I do like sandwiches. And, you know, it's always been my goal to have a sandwich named after me. So maybe we
really?
Can talk. Of course, I'm a Jew. It's like, yeah. We're a Jew. It's like the highest honor that can be bestowed upon someone is to have a sandwich named after them.
We've really struggled with that. It might be inevitable, but we kind of want to get away from calling it, like, you know, the lucky dog or the, you know, the...
The Mike Edison?
The Mike Edison we might make an exception for. What would be in that sandwich, Mike?
Schmaltz.
The secret ingredient would not be love. I've been working on a sardine sandwich, actually.
Really?
A sardine sandwich with the red onions comes on a pumpernickel bread. And my sandwich, now I'm saying on the radio, everyone's going to know, my sandwich is the only sandwich that actually comes with its own beer. Like, you just, when you order the sandwich, it just comes with a bottle of Pilsner Kel.
I love it.
Comes with a bottle of Pilsner Kel. It's part of the package. You can't order it any other way.
Oh, wow.
It's based on a sandwich I had in Germany once at this, like, outdoor market. It was a smoke-free sandwich on, like, this pumpernickel bread with some red onions.
Yeah.
And
it
was German Pilsner, but, I mean, that was my sandwich. It was you know, one of those memorable food experiences, sitting outside a spring day in the market.
Wow.
And eating smoked fish on pumpernickel with onions and Pilsner.
Wow. Well, if you like that, we actually, I'm very excited. I get excited about things like this, but everything that we're doing in the space is very deliberate, but we just, one of the things that we were struggling with were the tables and chairs, and I just scored an entire set, like 20 chairs and like five tables of the vintage Hofbräu German, yes. The tables and chairs, the folding, wrought iron steel.
Chairs are important.
Yeah, but you know what I'm talking about? The folding ones with the slats,
mm-hmm.
but they actually say Hofbräu on the back, which...
Beautiful. I know exactly what you're talking about.
I love them so much. They each weigh like 100 pounds. Yeah.
Is that what you were looking for in the space?
We weren't looking for those, and we just ended up getting them, and so I'm very excited about that.
Chairs are very important. You know, people don't really recognize how important chairs are to the restaurant experience.
My least favorite thing in the world, and I mean, I've eaten at fancy restaurants, and the wiggling table...
Oh.
The table. It
the
drives
fuck?
Me
dude,
nuts.
Dude, you there, and the table's not level, and some guy's got to run and get a pack of matches. Yeah. But, like, the table's been here for 30 years.
Yeah.
And you haven't fixed it yet? Like, what is going on here?
You know, all you have to do is have three, if you know how they have the cross, all it has to be is like a Mercedes sign. If it's three, it won't wobble. Yeah.
Well, yeah, 3 points of contact. Yes. Always make a plane.
Important things.
I spent 12 years in service, and I think that with every job, that was... You know, the first step of like our you know, getting ready for a service that night was like checking all the tables. No matter what you do, something is going to be off.
How about just affix the table to the floor and it doesn't ever move?
The Wobbly table, perfect. Dude, it's like, yeah, we check at the beginning of the night.
Yeah.
I'm getting there. It's like 8 in the evening. You've had people here all night and this table's wobbling.
Well, the thing is, though, is that if it moves 2 inches, then it wobbles. So just gloom to the floor, please. Speaking of sandwiches, foie gras.
Foie gras.
Yes. What do you guys think about that? The band and the reversal.
And the reversal. I'm guilty. You know, I think I'm going to be reincarnated as a goose, and I'm going to be force-fed cognac until my liver explodes. It's probably my karmic fate.
So you've led a good life.
Well, I've indulged in some foie gras, and I suppose that's my only sin. I could.
Right, but I don't. We were talking about it before, and I don't think. People are against foie gras, but then they'll go and eat like a corn-fed beef steak, which I think feeding cows is just as inhumane as foie gras, if not more.
Yeah, I mean, you're feeding cows grain, which is not their natural diet, and it's also the conditions in which you're doing it because it's confined feeding operations. And you pointed out to me earlier, Phil, that. It's they can't digest it.
Yeah, like corn. It's they're in pain.
Like constant discomfort.
Well, you know, we talked about this in the Carnivore's Manifesto, the book I wrote with Patrick Martins. Why are people like rallying against foie gras? I mean, there are bigger battles to be fought. This is such a narrow, niche sort of thing. And yeah, I'm sure it is cruel. There's no question in my mind that it's cruel. But really, this is what you want to put your energy towards. You don't want to work towards like a larger issue, like a broader definition of humanely sourced food and safe, clean, farming. I mean, really, that's what you're going to worry about is foie gras.
And also, too, cows and pigs have a very, very complex emotion because they're mammals. So I don't feel. I mean, this kind of might sound inhumane, but like I don't really feel too sympathetic for a chicken. No offense to chickens or goose or geese or whatever, but I mean, you know, the ways that pigs and cows are treated, that's really
more important to me. You can look into their eyes and you see this kind of human reflection back at you. There's kind of a connection you don't even realize is happening when you recognize their face. Another thing with the foie gras is I think it's a lot more visible because there is the images of being force fed and the idea of a tube going down, you know, a goose's throat. It's you know, a little more visceral for people. It's on the table. It's easier to recognize.
But it is delicious though.
It is delicious. I mean, would you rather have a tube shoved down your throat once a day or be kept in a cage in filthy conditions?
They're all awful.
Boy, this show's come a long way since Patrick was here running things.
Have you heard about this trend? I was just reading about this, that there's a I've actually come across it at Momo sometimes, but there's vegans that actually will eat oysters and clams. And there's like some there's a trend now where vegans
justify anything if you really want to.
Of course. I think that's called sociopath, I think.
No, isn't it up to the person to decide what they eat?
When you
say a diet like I am vegan, I see that as like an easy classification.
Yeah.
It's like I am making the statement so that in this moment you will know or understand, you know, this broader idea of what my diet is.
Yeah.
And if you choose to do, you know, to eat something else, I think that's fine. I mean,
sure. You know,
just because you say you're vegan doesn't mean you're beholden to some manifesto. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it doesn't guarantee you a ticket into heaven being vegan.
Well, you did ask me last week one of my pet peeves, and this has been one of my pet peeves as long as I've worked in restaurants, but when somebody says, oh, I'm vegetarian, oh, but I eat fish. So
that's not vegetarian.
That's not a vegetarian.
No, you know, listen, people can choose what they want to eat and what they don't want to eat.
Yeah.
I know carnivores or sort of self-described omnivores who won't eat chicken because when they were young, they were taken to a chicken farm and they saw how filthy it was and they've not eaten chicken since then, but are happy to eat a big steak or pretty much anything else. I know people who say I'm vegetarian or lapsed vegetarian because bacon shows up next to their scrambled eggs in the morning. Well, a vegetarian, they eat eggs and cheese, you know.
My grandfather, I think, lived to be, 83, but when he was 16, he worked for one day in a hot dog factory.
That'll put you off hot dogs.
Guess what?
No hot dogs.
For his entire life, he never ate another hot dog.
Nicht Kraut. Reversed. Nothing.
Hot dog is up there on my favorite food list. It's like by far one of my favorite junk foods.
Yeah.
I don't know. My spirit animal's a hot dog.
I love a good crispy burnt hot dog.
That's right. I love, it's got to be on that grill for a long time.
Yeah.
I'm a Hebrew Nats guy.
Yeah.
Okay. The Hebrew National is sort of where I live. I will do a dirty water dog occasionally on the street but it never really satisfies the way really like all beef answers to a higher authority dog that's been sitting on the grill at Katz's for like 18 hours.
Split them. You got to split it.
Oh, yeah.
Flip it.
No,
oh, yeah.
I disagree. I think that there's something magical in a dirty water dog. I mean, like that water has just like been marinated for days. Like there's magic in that water. And it's not like the dog I go to, but I just, I want to celebrate the diversity and the variety in the hot dog world.
I fear not the dirty water dog, but I don't know. Maybe it's me. I've gotten older, changed, but I think the dog itself has changed since when I was a kid. Like street vendor food in general, I have this very visceral memory. It's my first really great food memory of buying a pretzel. I must have been like 7 or 8 years old outside of Madison Square Garden. My dad took me to see to a Rangers game, and we got this pretzel, and it was like, you know, burnt on one side and like wet and cold on the other in the same pretzel, because it was just the way the guy had it in like his cart. But just the smell of this pretzel to me was the smell of New York City.
It was a charred charcoal
smell, and then like the shock of finding that somehow one end of it was like, you know, completely still wet and yuck.
Yeah.
That was New York.
Wow.
That was, you know, I'll never forget that. It was so good. I love that. I've been in search of that pretzel ever since.
Wow. It's funny that we mentioned dirty water. We were talking about this. We didn't know if we were going to talk about it or not, but since you said dirty water, I have to bring it up. Bill Gates had a very expensive glass of water this week. The Gates Foundation has funded this thing called the Janicki Omniprocessor, and it's a kind of a way to bring the rest of the world clean water, but it's actually processed from sewage.
I hope he drank it with a shit-eating grin.
Yeah, he did. It looks like he
There's
did.
There's a YouTube
yeah.
video. I mean, it's
you know, happy. I guess that, you know, a lot of the world does not have proper sewage and clean drinking water, and this kind of kills two birds with one stone.
Listen, the wars are going to be fought over water. Yeah. Count on it. I mean, that's going to be the next. People are going to fight over food and water. We're headed there.
Yeah,
it's, you know, the dystopian future we've seen in kooky movies, Soylent Green, whatever. It's going to happen, and we're going to be fighting over this shit.
Who was it? I'm sorry if I'm misquoting this story, but I think it was the CEO of Nestle or one of those guys, and he said he has the quote that he thinks that water should not be free for people.
You know, in a lot of countries, it's not. In Germany, you pay for a glass of water at a restaurant. Like, when you order water.
Really?
Yeah, and it's not much. You know, it's 25, 50 cents, whatever it is. But, like, you pay for water.
Wow.
And in a lot of other countries, you do. Because it isn't, it, you know, it's a limited resource.
Wow.
Well, remember a time when water didn't come in plastic bottles.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, wow, people are going to pay for water when it started out. It was a hard idea to sell, I think. People are going to get people to pay a dollar for water. You know, they're going to go to a store and buy a dollar for water. What, when they're going to have soda pop? Yeah. And it was just a crazy concept. And, of course, bottled water became, like, the fastest, most explosive, you know, segment in the beverage industry. It was crazy.
Ever.
But
yeah.
Do you ever think, imagine a time when you have to pay to watch TV?
Yeah.
All right? And now everybody's, like, paying cable bills and Netflix bills. And to pay to watch TV, it's fucking free.
Yeah.
Water, free.
Yeah.
That Nestle guy needs to have his ass kicked. Fuck him.
Yeah, right?
All right, so I think we're going to take a break and come back with more with Mike Edison.
Yeah, we have some very, very good questions for you.
All right.
All right.
Can't wait. Let's get Alex a shot of tequila.
Yes.
Right. You are listening to At Least I Got My Baby by Camelia Hartman.
United States that has its own USDA inspected red meat abattoir or slaughterhouse and its own USDA inspected poultry abattoir or slaughterhouse. We partner with Whole Foods to deliver our high quality meat and poultry from Miami, Florida, all the way to Princeton, New Jersey. One family, one farm, five generations, 145 years. A full circle return to sustainable land stewardship and humane animal stockmanship. For more information, please visit our website, whiteoakpastures.com.
This is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, and you're listening to heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome back to the main course. Alexis McLaughlin, Philip Gilmore, and we're here with Mike Edison in studio, talking a little bit more about his prolific writing.
I love being a guest on Heritage Radio. This is the best. So much better than being a host. I suppose I should plug my own show. If any of this bullshit that I'm spouting makes any sense, tune in at 2 o'clock today and every Sunday to hear Arts and Seizures.
Well, I guess right off I have to ask you a question. G.G. Allen.
Oh.
What was that like?
The G.G. Allen thing. making water for Bill Gates. Since,
yeah. and hot dogs.
The dirty water G.G. Allen experience. You know, I counted G.G. Allen as a friend. And when I wrote about him, I tried to come from the point of view, like, you know, I mean, we got along very, he could be very charming. I mean, his reputation obviously precedes him, you know, as this, you know, out of control rock and roll come performance artiste.
How much was I mean, obviously on stage he was an actor,
let me tell you something about Gigi. It's like he's the one guy where the myth doesn't even come close to the reality,
really.
You know, it's like I always say, it's like Liberty Valance in reverse.
Yeah,
you know, I mean really, you heard how wild he was and how dangerous he was, and it was 1,200 times more than that.
Really?
People would book Gigi Allen, some kid. We played shows and, you know, in the South and in Canada and you know off away from New York City. Some young Turk would always think he's going to make his bones by booking a Gigi Allen show and impress his punk rock friends. And about 30 seconds into the show, he'd say, "Holy shit, I made a mistake."
Yeah. Wow.
But you know he's very smart and a better musician than he probably gets credit for, you know, in most circles. He was, you know, a really good singer. He's a terrific drummer, which a lot of people don't know. And I enjoyed the experience. At some point, I had to walk away from it. I just couldn't deal with it. We had our lives threatened after shows.
Yeah.
You know, I remember, like, one show we did in North Carolina, and, like, these kids came to our room with, like, baseball bats, our hotel room, and it was like, and he called the cops.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, when Gigi Allen calls the cops, you know you're about to enter a world of pain.
Yeah. Like, guilt by association, just being by proxy.
You know, I mean, there were riots. I mean, the show lasted, you know, more than, you know, a couple songs. It was great. We played in New York, and a couple times, we sort of agreed beforehand that he wasn't going to, you know, I mean, this guy, for those who don't know, who defecated on stage, who, you know, cut himself up. I mean, this is like way past what Iggy Pop was doing. And, you know, it was just completely out of control. He really wanted to be the dark side. He was, you know, it wasn't an act. And he wrote some very good songs. And, you know, it went on a good night when he had a good band behind him. It was something else. And when we played in New York, we made an agreement amongst ourselves that we were going to keep it, you know, I'm curing my big air quotes, clean. So we could, you know, so we might be able to come back again and not get banned from every, you know, fucking bar and nightclub in New York, which, you know, has been pretty much what had happened.
Yeah. Wow.
And at some point, I had to walk away from it. It was just, I mean, honestly, there were some bad vibes attached to that, as you can imagine. But we always stayed friends. And
how did you get started? Like where do you meet Gigi Allen?
You meet Gigi Allen at the legendary Cat Club show that he had played. My friend Michael Board, who was a longtime Maximum Rock and Roll writer, said, "You're going to love this guy," and gave me this record, this EP Gigi had made, Gigi Allen and the Scum Fox. It was seven songs about butt-fucking ass-licking something-something and masturbation. I forget the exact title of the record.
The show is certainly not family-oriented this week.
Yeah, I'm breaking all the rules today. And that's Arts and Seizures today at 2 o'clock, if you want to know more of this.
Breaking.
Yeah, on today's show we have Rosie Schapp from the New York Times, the Queen of Cocktails.
Ooh.
And we're actually going to invent a new cocktail on the radio today.
Wow. Is it going to be called the Mike Edison?
I don't know. Pete Zaremba, who's sitting in as my guest co-host from the Flesh Tones, if you know Peter Zaremba, a former MTV star, is going to be twirling some kind of cocktail. But the Cat Club show with Gigi Allen was this legendary show. He was booked. The band was... I mean, it was guys from Dinosaur Jr. and Sonic Youth were in his band. I mean, it was like sort of like alt-rock, indie-rock royalty.
Yeah.
This is... I think about 1986, I think.
Wow.
This must have been. And on the first song, this long instrumental, Gigi just starts to take a shit on the stage. I mean, I know this sounds so awful, and it was awful, probably more awful than you can imagine. And yet there was something highly comic about Thurston Moore playing guitar behind a guy who's like throwing shit around the stage.
Wow.
And it, I don't know. The show lasted maybe like 8 minutes. People were fleeing. The club emptied. I mean, he made a statement. You know, it's a big fuck you. This is a guy who alienates even his best fans.
Yeah.
Gleefully. Willfully.
Gigi Allen is never someone that, like, I associate with music. I associate with the persona of the show.
And outrage. But I loved that record. That record was really sharp. It was this really dirty, grungy punk rock sound. But it was like, you know, I mean, he had a really good pop sense. And, you know, he's a good singer. And, the songs were great. I mean, I played that record over and over again just because it was, like, really right on. And it was autobiographical. When he was singing the song, I'm sorry. No one's ever going to listen to your show again after this.
Okay, that's
right. Yeah.
But, like, he did this song called Needle Up My Cock, which is a story about getting a VD test, you know? And the guitar break actually viscerally, palpably sounded like what getting that that experience must have felt like. I mean, it was like really trembling. It's like, oh man, it was just really right on.
Yeah.
And funny. You know, it was funny. I mean, it's outrage and it's shock rock and it's dirty and it's totally X-rated.
I did get permission from Patrick to go big on this show, so that's what I guess we're doing right now.
But I loved it. So I met him there. I talked to him for a second after the show. He was like being escorted out. You know, he had to get the hell out of there. I mean, and then I wrote a story about him for Screw Magazine. I worked for Screw Magazine in the 80s, and I later became the editor of Screw later on. But at the time, I was just a writer, and I went up to Boston to meet him. He lived in New Hampshire. He was a real like hellbilly from New Hampshire, GG. But he agreed to meet me in Boston, and we did what was turned out to be the first big feature story written about him. It was kind of cool, and we became friends. You know, he said, I'm coming back to New York to make a record, and he's like, you should play on it. We just got along all right. He really liked country music. He loved Jerry Lee Lewis, as did I. He turned out to be much more interested in like the Rolling Stones than Black Flag and, you know, the punk rock bands of the era. He really liked, you know, this old school rock and roll. So we got along on that level.
Yeah.
He said, you should be on my next record. So we got together. I played the drums and wrote a few songs for him. And, that's how it happened.
Well, on to a more elegant topic. You know, I read a little bit about your music and wine pairing that you did with Joe. And what was that like? How did that come about?
Joe Bastianich. You collaborated with Restaurant Man.
I worked with Joe Bastianich on his book, Restaurant Man. And we became friends while we were working on it. And it's a really terrific book, by the way. I mean, I think Joe really lays it down. I know a lot of people were a little shocked at some of the things he had to say.
Yeah.
But, you know, Joe's a guy from Queens, and he's pretty honest, you know. And, they're more, the euphemism I hate more than anything, the F-bomb, you know. But, I mean, there are more fucks in that book than in an episode of Deadwood. and people were like, oh, I can't believe, you know, this guy talks like this. It's like, have you ever worked in a fucking kitchen?
Yeah.
You know? Like, have you ever worked with adults anywhere? You know, people were really shocked that the book was, like, so earthy, let's say. But Joe's a great guy and a great music fan and a great musician himself. We had this concept. I was editing a book of lists kind of thing, and I said, we should pair wines with Led Zeppelin songs.
Yeah.
You know, we were probably a little stoned and driving around, and he's like, this is a great idea. And so we're like, yeah, don't you want, you know, Celebration Day should be bubbles, right? Something sparkling, and, you know, and cashmere should be something big that opens up and is expansive, right?
Yeah.
Right, you're feeling it. You're Zeppelin fan.
Yeah, totally. Dun, dun, dun.
And that's the sound of your Barolo opening up, right?
Impending doom and pleasure at the same
and
time.
And Joe says, well, you know, we could do this. I mean, like, I do own a restaurant, you know, or nine, you know. So we did it. First night we did it, like, just DJing it at Becco. And you can look this up. It's on the internet. You look up Great Led Zeppelin Wine Pairing. There's a Wikipedia page about the event at Becco.
Wow.
And, like, people were eating steak and drinking Barolo and listening to Cashmere, and it all sort of came together.
Wow.
So we shot a few videos recently. They're not out yet. We're kind of putting it together where we listen to Led Zeppelin and kind of, you know, pairing Lumbrisco with Celebration Day. And,
wow.
And, you know, and arguing over Presents. Are you a Led Zeppelin fan?
I love Led Zeppelin.
How do you feel about Presents, the record Presents?
It's good.
Oh, fuck you. The record
it's great.
It's awesome.
It's great, but I mean, Led Zeppelin 2.
It's got such a bad
3.
Reputation on the record. I don't know why.
It's a great album. It's the one probably that I've listened to the least.
You should.
I do love it, though.
Okay, after the show, I want you to go home and listen to it some more.
I promise I will.
Because it's awesome.
Homework for Mike Edison.
Yeah. That's it. No, really, Presence is great, you know?
Yeah.
I know people sort of like tend to think that, like, after, I guess, Physical Graffiti it was done, but Presence is just like this masterful explosion.
Yeah.
You know, it may be a little bit more difficult than some of the records, but man, it's absolutely Page's very, very best.
Mm.
It's huge.
Yeah.
Achilles Last Stand?
Achilles Last Stand. Yeah, I love Achilles Last Stand.
I don't really know where to go from Zeppelin. Yeah. I mean, it does it all.
G.G. Allin to Led Zeppelin.
Yeah, right on.
In 60 seconds.
What do you have in the coming year?
Well, I got a radio show I'm doing in like 2 hours from now. That's
sure.
Arts and Seizure right here.
Yeah, awesome.
2 p.m.
Awesome.
So
maybe a little further in the future.
Stay on your internet machine and listen to us get even drunker on the radio at 2 o'clock. I always got a few things on the back burner. I've got my band, the Garden State Social Club, which playing somewhere near you soon. It's kind of like an aggressive 60s soul band.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's happening. There's always things that we're. Hopefully, I'll be announcing a new book soon, but it would be premature to like be putting that out just yet.
Also, theremin. You play the theremin. Yeah, well, did I pronounce it right?
Theremin? There's a cat on the internet that plays a theremin, so let's not overvalue.
Is it a hobby or is it a passion?
No, it's actually, I get a lot of gigs, actually. You'd be surprised.
Really?
You know, have theremin, we'll travel. Well, you know, it goes back to Led Zeppelin. I got my theremin concept from watching Jimmy Page play the theremin on A Whole Lot of Love. You know, mm-hmm. watch, and the song remains the same. You could see him playing the theremin.
Yeah.
And that's where, I mean, people come to theremin from all sorts of different places, and people like to play, you know, the Bach, you know, violin partitas on it, and are more precise. I'm more interested in, like, making a racket.
Mm-hmm.
And just psychedelic sounds and science fiction sounds and, you know, the sounds of, like, what I imagine a war in space would sound like.
You should do a theremin wine pairing. You can drink a nice Barolo and then see what it inspires.
I'll tell you,
watch
my YouTube numbers jump, but there is a very good YouTube video of when we did the wine, Led Zeppelin wine tasting, uh-huh. Joe Bastianich and I, at City Winery. We had this fabulous Led Zeppelin cover band working with us, and Scott Ian from Anthrax was in the band that
awesome.
Night. It was really good, and I did play theremin in A Whole Lot of Love.
Really?
And there's a really good video of it on
really?
YouTube. I think it says Mike Edison theremin Led Zeppelin wow. something or other, but tune in and
that's amazing.
Hear me make a racket.
Yeah. All well, right. this has been very
Alexis
enlightening.
Alexis is gesticulating.
It's radio.
I can't help it. It's my nature.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Actually, it's so much better being a guest than being the host.
Wow.
We're happy to have you as a guest. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you, Alexis, for asking me.
Aww. Well, I look forward to the coming weeks, Alexis.
Yeah, something exciting in store for every week to come. Yeah. But thanks for trying. You know,
I'm telling you, I'm going to start the new show. It's where I'm going to be the guest every week, but the host changes.
Awesome.
Constantly. Like, I'm going to have like three hosts during
the show.
Just
invite someone on and
but I'll be the guest.
You.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah, and they'll always ask you questions. Yes? I love it.
Arts and Seizures with Mike Edison, the perpetual guest.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much.
Yeah, thank you so much. Happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.